Rules Committee meeting for today, the 24th. And we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1064. And with that, we will invite Senator Przanski. Do you want to bring anybody with you?
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. You have today before you for public hearing Senate Bill 1064. 1064 was a bill that passed out of the Senate Rules Committee about a week ago based on the earlier bill version that we had, which was Senate Bill 1008. Because of some difficulties, some concerns as to the language that was in 1008, that bill was taken from the floor back to committee with the understanding that it would not go forward, but instead another bill would come forward, which is Senate Bill 1064. 1064 is basically narrows, and I should give you a framework that what 1064 was is to address an issue that has occurred because of a bill that we passed last session, which was Senate Bill 603. And 603, the intent at the time that it was being drafted and offered, based on my conversations with Mr. Sterik, the chair, myself, decided that we needed to make a fix to what our current long-term policy has been in the state as to how a felon is treated after they've been convicted as to getting their right to possess a firearm back. Previous to 603, so prior to the change under the bill that was passed in 2009, a individual, anyone could petition a court to purchase, and I'm going to be using two terms, purchase and possess, because they're bifurcated as to how they were addressed and what could be done. But under pre-603, anyone could petition a court to purchase a gun, but a felon could never possess a firearm without being in violation of state law. Even though they could, if sufficient time had passed, they would automatically be able to not be held accountable for a felon in possession, which is a felony. They could always and were treated as an individual breaking the law as a misdemeanor as it pertains to unlawful possession of a firearm. After Mr. Sterik and I talked about it, it didn't make sense to me that if we were automatically allowing individuals to have a felon possession as a felony taken away from being a charge that they could face after 15 years, and it was based on an individual who only had one felony conviction. That felony conviction was not involving what's defined as a gun-related offense, which also includes certain type of switchblades and other type of knives, or a criminal homicide. So as long as your convictions were not for one of those two offenses, you automatically received your right to be able to purchase to possess the firearm without being in violation of the felony, but you still would get caught up as a misdemeanor. So after I heard this, it only made sense that if we're going to allow an individual to be able to purchase a firearm, that they should in fact be able to possess that firearm. That was the intent going into the 2009 session, during the 2009 session, and how Senate Bill 603 was to be brought forward. After 603 was passed, it was brought to my attention, as well as Chair Barker's attention, by the Department of Justice, as well as the ODAA, Oregon District Attorneys Association, that the language that was used in Senate Bill 603 actually opened the door for any felon, no matter what the felony charge of conviction was, no matter how many felon convictions they had, could in fact be able to get their right to possess a firearm back. That was clearly not the intent of myself as the chair in agreeing to move forward the other proposal. Because of that, it was decided at that point that we would take care of this matter during the February session. We knew that the bill itself, 603, would not go in effect until January of this year, and that we would be coming back for a short session in February. So we assumed that we'd have somewhere between a 6 and 8 week period that law would be in effect, and we could actually make the modifications and carry out what was the intent of the chair, and everyone seemed to be in agreement with that. Unfortunately, as I mentioned, when Senate Bill 1008 was written, it had a very large relating clause relating to crime. We had numerous different bills, components that people asked us to put in there. And another thing that Mr. Sterik asked me to take care of when we were trying to fix 60 as to matters that we're trying to fix in 603 was readily accessible weapons on, I'm going to call them ATVs or other type of motorcycle type of vehicles, and that needed, as he requested, that it have a lockbox, and I agreed that that'd be fine. But we didn't realize is that when we did that, it was going to be all-encompassing, and it would in fact require and prohibit individuals such as farmers and ranchers who in fact need to have readily accessible a firearm when they're out in the field from being able to have it as readily accessible unless it was on lockbox. That is the reason why 1008 came off the floor and went back to committee not to go forward. So that brought us to bringing out 1064, which was a bill that was drafted and that's before you in its current form. It basically narrows from what the current law is and has only been the law for the last 7 weeks to allow for an individual to be able to petition a court. In this case, it says the circuit court to possess a firearm that would be that an individual would only have one conviction, and that conviction not for homicide or a gun or other preemptive weapons offense after they had waited for 15 years. That's the bill that you have before you now. Now, my understanding is that there's been some concern on this side as to whether we should be moving that forward or not. And my concern is that with the current bill that law that's on the books, anyone, including a murderer, can in fact petition the court for the right to possess a firearm. And under the current law, they can go to, in fact, they have to go to first to a justice court. Justice courts in this state, about, if I'm not mistaken, there are about 30 of them. Half of them have legally trained individuals that are sitting as justices, the other half do not. And it seems to me that when you're getting into these type of legal issues that you would want someone that is actually trained and understanding that if you do this, what the ramifications could be versus if you do something else. That is why we are trying to, one, narrow it down to being in the circuit courts. And that's why Senate Bill 1064 says that an individual would be able to petition the court after the 15 years for their right to possess so long as the conviction was not for homicide or a gun-related offense. Now, you have a dash one, which I understand that the committee is looking at. The dash one is basically would allow the current law to stay in place, which means anyone who has multiple convictions for felonies, anyone that has been convicted of murder, and as well as anyone who's been convicted in another state of a felony who comes to this state and claims residency, and residency is just basically saying, I live here now. There is no time frame for them to actually be in the state before they can claim being a resident of the state to be able to go in and actually petition the court for the right to possess. Now, I understand the dash ones does narrow it a little bit in the sense of that it basically says that that petition has to go in front of the circuit court and will no longer be allowed to go in front of the justice court. What you have for me that I've have given to the chair as well as to the committee administrator is the dash three. The dash three keeps Senate Bill 1064 intact as it was passed by the Senate, but it does in fact apply a sunset clause. That sunset clause would go into effect on July 1, 2011. And the reason for the date of the sunset clause, it would allow us as the legislature to move forward during this interim and then next session to actually make a modification to the bill so we can actually have a means of allowing some felons who I believe should have the right to petition the court earlier than what the, right now, under, well, I should say right now, prior to 603, they never had that right to go forward. This would actually allow for ones that I believe the majority of the citizens of the state would feel comfortable to actually have their petition heard by a court. My goal today is to try to keep individuals that have been specifically committed murders from being able to go forward and ask even to petition a court. I just don't think that's a good public policy, knowing where our state has been. And if you look at the statutes, other qualifications that we've had for individuals does, in fact, exempt out murderers. Now, the I understand that there's a letter that's been tendered to the committee from the Oregon District Attorneys Association, and I can tell you that when you read through that letter, it says that the ODAA supports a full repeal of the error that was made with 603, but clearly they prefer to have the dash ones than not have anything go forward, because the status quo right now is not acceptable. I think we all are in agreement to that, and I would submit that I would agree that we do need to have either 1064 as it's been presented to you, or we need to take one of the two amendments, depending on what the comfort level of the committee is. My goal, again, is to make certain that people that we believe that are not, let's say, should not be entitled to even petition the court, that do not have that right. So besides ODAA having a support for the dash threes as to if they could have it their way, understanding that the dash ones are probably the ones that the Kimmy is looking at, I want to put on the record that the Oregon Gun Owners group, represented by Paul Phillips, put on the rules record on the Senate side that they support 1064. I can also say with some certainty that the Department of Justice, who actually brought this to us as to the concern, also would support the 1064s, and I would assume that they would also support the dash threes. The dash threes would be basically give us a status quo as to not allowing any and all felons to come forward and attempt to petition the court for that relief, including those who reside actually out of state that would claim residency for the part of getting their rights back. I have not had an opportunity to speak to any of the victim groups, but I can tell you as a survivor of a murder, I believe that those groups too would also think that individuals such as the ones I've described should be prohibited from being able to carry and possess a firearm. Now, the last two things I want to leave with you is the first one is one that Representative Garrett had provided to my, or to Anna Braun, who provided it to my office after I talked to Representative Garrett, as an attorney in the, I believe, in the Lake Oswego area that basically was speaking against Senate Bill 1064, because, as he says, he has clients that are now getting their gun rights back, meaning people that have felony convictions in the state are actually using the law, even though it's only been in effect for about 7 months. The last piece of information I will give to you is after we had hearings in the Senate Judiciary Committee on 1007, which was the earned time bill, the same day we had the 1008, which is the bill I've already referred to, a gentleman who was in the room that was there for the hearing on 1008 wrote me an email and stated that, and this is an individual by the name of Vern C. Wigley, and Mr. Wigley says that he's a U.S. Army Special Forces Green Beret, and that he was very taken back hearing the testimony on the earned time. He said that he wanted to be able to reach out to those individuals and tell them how he felt for them. But going through his email, he gets to the point, he said, the convicted felons that committed those type of crimes deserve only the death penalty, in his opinion. Neither I nor the NRA or OFF, which is Oregon Firearms Federation, advocates giving this type of felon, advocate for giving this type of felon any access to a firearm, period. I can say with confidence that without that he would not be associated with any organization that felt that those type of individuals should have the right to bear possess a firearm. So I know that this is late in the session, but I wanted to put this on the table because I just felt on my position as to what I intended to do in this session to fix what was wrong with the 2009 bill, that you have all that information, and I hope that you will consider it. And I also understand that whatever you do, if it's not passing 1064 as it is, that you do need to do either the dash ones or the dash threes. Personally, I think the dash threes gives us more of a public policy that we've had in the state up until January 1 of this year, and safeguarding that individuals such as murderers will not have the right to even petition for their rights back. But if not, if we go with the dash ones, I've already put this on the record and have spoken to the two advocates that you'll be hearing from next, that we will be having hearings. We will be doing a work group, I should say, and then we'll have another hearing that will, in fact, be putting together a list, because I do, in fact, believe when you look at certain felony crimes, such as driving while suspended, those might be the type that we would say they should have the right to seek their redress through a court to get their rights back to possess, as compared to someone who has committed a person crime, such as rape, some type of sexual assault, or some type of violent robbery with a firearm or murder. With that, I will stand for any questions if you have any.
Any questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Do you have a question?
Oh, yep, Representative Garrett.
Senator, have you seen the LC opinion provided to Senator Boquist about the interaction between federal and state law? And could you comment on that for us?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Garrett. I was just handed 15 minutes before this hearing a copy of that. It's a February 12th LC opinion that I guess Senator Boquist had asked regarding the impact of whatever we did in our state and how it could impact whatever the federal system provides for. My understanding is that the LC opinion at this point does not believe if we, whatever we do at the state level would preempt, or we could be, I should say, preempted by the federal law. In other words, that the federal law would not be hindered by us trying to give, let's say, protection at the state level. And I would say that that's very common, as you know, Representative Garrett, that it's not uncommon that you may have protections at the state level, but you could still find yourself being exposed to liability or, in this case, criminal charges on the federal level. We've seen that in multiple different areas of the law. And so it appears that from this opinion, that we would not be able to insure an individual because they may have their rights restored at the state level, that they wouldn't still be subject to prosecution at the federal level. That's my take on that.
And Senator Boquist is here, so we'll be calling him next. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I can be excused to go back to the floor. Thank you.
Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm State Senator Brian Boquist, the Vice Chair of Judiciary and the individual who served notice of a potential minority report when this came out on a split vote out of our original committee. I'm not here to advocate for or against the bill. I did try to make sure that the administrator made mention of this, Mr. Chair, that you knew about the Legislative Council opinion, and I wanted to explain it to you so you understood what federal law was. And we went back several times to check this. And especially, Mr. Chair, regardless of you, I wanted to be on the record so that the Attorney General, the State Police, the County Sheriffs, and the District Attorneys understand the federal position, because it has a major impact of what we're doing. Present law today, regardless of what we do in this legislature, and I did see the conference committee, interesting, Mr. Chair, whatever we do today doesn't really matter. The Oregon Constitution was amended in 1989, and it said that in order to have your civil rights restored and to sit on a jury in the state of Oregon, you had to be 15 years beyond probation, parole, or post-supervision. And that is a portion of the Oregon State Constitution. Federal law as it pertains to the purchase of a weapon, whether it's the purchase of a weapon from a federal firearms licensee, that's a gun shop, or whether Representative Edwards sells a gun to Representative Hanna, it doesn't make any difference. It applies to individuals and applies to gun owners. You may not sell a firearm in the United States of America to a felon until they can sit on a jury. That's the federal law. So that means regardless of what you do, and we need to ensure that the courts do it, and I'm all about understanding the difference between circuit courts and Maupin City Court, as I've said over at our committee and a few other things. I'm not beating up Maupin either. But the law is the law. So it is 15 years. And the reason we got to this, and I apologize, Mr. Chair, because we had this opinion, we thought it had kind of gone away, and as Senator Brzezinski said, this is going to end up in a work group. This is so complex, as the lawyers know that are sitting up here. This is so complex, we're not going to fix it. Regardless of what you do, it is not going to get fixed. And we're going to have to go back and kind of sort through it. But we kept asking in our committee, Mr. Chair, was, okay, where did the 15 years come from? Was this like three quarters of the way to retirement? How do we come up? This 15 years didn't magically come up. And then it was finally after multiple questions that we tracked down the 15-year portion. So the Legislative Council opinion is before you. It's on the record. Regardless of you, Mr. Chair, I hope that the state police, the county sheriffs, the district attorneys, and the AGs pay attention, and especially the Supreme Court, so that they make sure judges understand across the state that the federal law says you can't purchase a weapon for 15 years. Now, we can't change the Constitution right here, and maybe it'll be a referral next time around, but that's what we came up with the research at our end, and I'm not taking a position any direction on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the Senator? Thank you very much for being here, Senator Boquist. The last three people, Kevin Serrett, Rod Harder, and Elizabeth Kushwa.
Is there something I can do?
Elizabeth, you can wait if you want. We'll just go with two.
Mr. Chair, I'm a member of the committee. For the record, I'm Rod Hardy, National Rifle Association consultant for Oregon. I'm here today in support of the Dash 1 amendments. Based on a number of things which you've been said, my testimony is going to be very brief. As Senator Boquist said, what we do is really not going to make any difference. We can change things back. We can leave them the same. It doesn't make any difference based on tribal law. The 603 passed this legislature a year ago with no votes. It passed the Senate twice with no votes. We went through House Judiciary, which some of us here sat, and had no votes there. It's been in effect for 2 months or less. And so we don't have any kind of a record on it. If we pass this bill, the Dash 1 amendment, we are going to move the requirement for someone to petition from a justice court to a circuit court, which means they're going to go before someone with a law background. That would give us, I would seem to me, protections because it has to be shown, according to the law, by clear and convincing evidence that a person petitioning is in it within his rights to have his rights restored. With that, I'll close and just say that we think the Dash 1s furnish sufficient protection and remove any danger that might be existing, whether real or imagined.
Thank you.
So, members of the committee, Kevin Starrett on behalf of the Oregon Firearms Federation. You have my written testimony and a copy of an email that I think most of you got. I'm not going to read my testimony because, unfortunately, I have to disagree with everybody who spoke previously. First of all, Senator Prezansky made some comments about the motorcycle language, and in fact, the motorcycle language is what got the bill sent back to committee, and the motorcycle language was exactly correct. It didn't say you had to have a long gun in a lockbox. And that's the problem. Nobody understands this bill. The language in 1008, that language was exactly correct and only dealt with handguns with people who did not have concealed handgun licenses. I can assure you, I would not have requested language that restricted gun rights. So that part was wrong. In deference to Senator Boquist, I think he's incorrect as well. To my knowledge, there's nothing in federal law that says anything about 15 years. Federal law specifically says if your rights have been restored in the jurisdiction that the crime took place in or the jurisdiction in which you live, your gun rights are restored. As a matter of fact, I believe on the letter that Senator Boquist got, there's a copy of a federal 4473, which is the form that you fill out when you buy a gun. And it quite specifically says there, if you've had your rights restored, you put down no in the box that says, have you been convicted of a crime? So what we do here very much does matter. It matters a great deal. And I came to support the Dash 1 amendments because the one thing we all agreed on, the Department of Justice, the NRA, Senator Prezansky, everybody, that Justice Court was not the right place for this. So the Dash 1 amendments make perfect sense on this bill. The sunset provision, of course, I haven't seen those amendments, so I can't comment on those, but if that leaves current law intact, or I'm sorry, if it leaves 64 intact, that is exactly the opposite of what we were hoping to do. And I would really plead with you guys to take some time. Nobody's getting this at all. For the entire time we've been discussing these bills, there's been confusion over the purchase but not possess issue and the 15-year issue, which is totally separate. They have never had anything to do with each other, but for some reason, we can't seem to get anyone to understand that. So I would just really suggest to you that the Dash 1 amendments are very important. The bill's very important. It really does do a lot of things. And none of us have any desire to arm murderers or rapists, I can assure you. But under 1064, a person who gave a gun to a brother in another state or a sister in another state can never request to get their gun rights back because that is a felony. And under this proposed bill, those people who made that mistake, and I can assure you, they walk among you, there are several of your colleagues who have committed that felony, those people would never be allowed to have their rights restored. And I doubt if we get this into circuit court that there are going to be circuit court judges handing gun rights back to murderers and rapists. So I just urge you that you consider the Dash 1 amendments, move those ahead, and then we have until 2011 to find out if there's actually a problem.
Any questions for these witnesses? Thank you both. Oh, yes. Representative Carr.
Just a question for Rod Hunter,
yeah.
If I can. Rod, what's your opinion on the 15-year? Is it in effect or isn't it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, I'm confused about that also.
Okay.
And even more so, having seen the letter from Legislative Council.
You've been a great help.
I'm here to please, sir.
Representative Berger.
Thank you. Gentlemen, but what we can agree on is the Dash 1 amendments to 1064.
We do.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, oh, Representative Jensen, one second.
And I think this is obvious, but what we also can agree on is that 603 needs to be fixed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, I'm happy to address that. One of the offers that we made, if you will, to Senator Pazansky at the very beginning of this discussion was to work on that. And I have committed to Representative Roblin that I would be willing to do it. And I can't speak for Mr. Sterrett, but my guess is he would want to be a part of it.
I believe that the Dash 1 amendments do fix 603. But okay. If there's more to it, then here I am.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you both. Thank you. Elizabeth Kushwa. And we have to get the floor fairly quickly, so we'll make this go as quick as we can.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Kushwa, here representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Thank you so much for asking for our opinion on this. The district attorneys always remain ready to assist the legislature with any issues they have regarding public safety. I don't believe that the legislature ever did intend for violent felons to be able to receive guns. That being said, I understand that in the interests of time for this session, the Dash 1s do provide an adequate stopgap by preventing justices of the peace from being able to restore people's gun rights. We sincerely hope that this body takes up the substantive policy in addressing the other portion of the bill in this interim and can come back in 2011 with some more details. We're happy to help in any way.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And with that, Representative Berger. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1064. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1064. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, in order to make everybody happy, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1064.
Representative Berger moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 1064. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Any opposition? Seeing none. So moved. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1064 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves the Senate Bill 1064 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so moved. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1064. We're going to open a work session on rules. Pardon? Oh, carrier of that bill will be Representative Barker. Well, Representative Barker carrier. And we're going to open a work session on our interim rules. Yesterday in session, we were handed a copy of those rules. In general, what they do is set two dates, one the 27th of September that we pre-session file bills that we want, and December 10th when we get them back. Is there any discussion about those rules? Would you like to make a motion?
What's the proper motion that we accept?
Here you go.
Mr. Chair, I move the proposed amendments to Section 12 and Section 12.05 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Berger moves the proposed amendments to Section 12.00 and 12.05 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so moved. We'll close the work session on our rules, and we will recess until our meeting at 3:45. Thank you.